Summer ran on me.
That's kind of epic, isn't it?
Expansive.
Expansive. A lot of emotion.
Grandiose.
A lot of sound. Grandiose, a good word. Lush. Welcome back. Lush. Welcome back. It's been a while. It is the Melnick and Murphy podcast, 27?
23, I think.
No.
Yeah?
23?
Alan.
We disagree already.
Alan.
Why would... 23. Yes. Why would I think 27? Man, 27 is going to be special, right?
Sure. What? It'll be the end. It'll be like Kurt Cobain.
Our last one. We're going out at 27. It's
Jimmy,
perfect.
Janice.
Sponsorship now available for episode 27.
The Murphy and Melnick podcast. The final episode.
That is the war on drugs. And we met from a deeper understanding a few years ago. One of the top probably broke into the top 10 of my all-time live concert appearances that I've seen. War on Drugs at the Jazz Fest outdoors last summer.
Best band name ever.
Yeah, no kidding.
Mom, I'm starting the band.
He's a Jewish kid from Philly. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. I've never heard anybody say his name, so I don't want to. I'm going to mispronounce it.
Wow.
It's Brian G. Whatever his name is, it kind of sounds Italian in print. He's not Italian. It's not his real name. But he's brilliant from Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. And they pull it off live. We are coming to you from CNS Studio in Western NDG.
La Oeste.
Oh, it's new.
Yeah.
23 is new.
Spanish.
You've been taking Spanish?
Nope.
Do you know Spanish?
Nope.
You can get away with it, though. You can get away with it making it sound like you're actually speaking Spanish when it's gibberish?
It's just the intent. The intent. That's all you need. That's all you need is balls. Say it with balls.
But it helps if you know how to sing, because Spanish is like sung,
I'd
right?
love to speak Spanish. I've been working on French. It's still a work in progress. I'm like...
Yeah, me too. 40 years.
I'm like probably a 4 out of 10. I'm like... Compared to the rest of Canada, I'm like a whiz, you know?
In French?
Oh, well, compared to... Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
Turn the cereal box around.
No, but you know, and if you're not in an environment where you have to speak it all the time, it's impossible to learn. I just wish they would have given me more clues in elementary school and high school.
High school especially.
About to what they taught in high school and elementary school compared to what street French is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Perfect example. I'm saying, you know what I mean? Now, you know that I'm saying, do you know what I mean, question mark? But I'm saying, you know what I mean? The equivalent being tse, which means to say. Do you know what I'm talking about? Tse. Tse, Mitch. C'est un bon match, yeah, soir, tse. Now, if you don't, anyways, whatever, we're getting you.
No, keep going.
Too much Jack Daniels.
Keep going.
If you give like little, you know, it's like a little keystone that you know every time the guy says, you know, tse, fait que, you're like, well, what's he saying? I don't know what he's saying, but if someone explains it to you,
right?
I've had the chance to mix the musical blood, as it were, with a lot of francophone musicians in Quebec and Montreal.
So. And like last year at the Jazz Fest, right? You're on stage with
Stéphane Morail, yeah, and the whole crew was francophone, except I think Lene was a woman from Toronto, was a very very accomplished keyboard player and a terrific singer. So we were the only two Anglophones in the band, and the rest of the crew was French. So,
and you're surrounded by French people. You frequently play Bistro Jojo. There are a lot of people probably listening who are on the West Island who may have heard about it, or they've gone to a show at Théâtre Saint-Denis, and they see this kind of intimate Bistro Jojo across the street.
Yeah. They're like, we're in the wrong part of town. Let's get back into the Volvo, honey. We got to go back to Beaconsfield. We'll get a couple of Tim Hortons on the way back, a double-double. Come on.
Yeah, maybe they should stop in at Bistro Jojo one night.
They should.
Because it's very unique. It's a very unique setting here.
Great room.
You get a lot of places like that in New York, Chicago, a lot of music cities, but they're all over the place, and they're all, like, top musicians every night.
Yeah.
Every night.
No, they have a B3 or Hammond B3 organ there, which is, I think, of the... to my knowledge, probably the only spot on the island that has a working B3. And they have no TVs in the main room. They have like one TV in the back so people want to watch the hockey game or whatever. But the main, you've been to Bistro Jojo.
Sure.
Yeah. So the main room is really music-centric, focused on the bands. And yeah, so they have live music, I think, 6, if not 7 nights a week. And yeah, very cool.
So this podcast, number 23, when I say number 23...
Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Who do you think of?
Leon Rochefort.
Of course, you'd say some weird, random,
older Canadians fans remember Leon Rochefort.
Rochefort?
Yeah, Leon Rochefort. He was a decent hockey player.
You having a good time over there? You had a good giggle, too, and you said you were like...
I bet you nobody's heard Leon Rochefort's name in
how do you spell
since
that?
They were a kid.
Rochefort.
Rochefort. Rochefort.
R-O-C-H-E-F-O-R-T. Rochefort.
Yeah, but I'm not, you know, I'm worse than you.
Rochefort. Okay. What's the Rochefort?
If you were talking to somebody, you wouldn't put it on. If you were just sitting around in a bar at Bistro Jojo, you wouldn't be saying, to your friend from Beaconsfield, would you? Leon Rochefort.
Is it Leo or Leon?
It's Leon, but in the NHL, Leon. He became Leo.
Leo Rochefort.
Yeah. Anyway, look him up. I'm not making this up. 65, middle 60s Canadians, early 60s. He was there for a long time. So the war on drugs. This
man,
episode,
we could digress, me and you, eh?
This episode, give you a chance to take a gulp.
Imagine we were drinking or like smoking stuff. How diluted the podcast would get.
Very professional.
I know.
Do you think anybody on the air in Montreal is ever over refreshed or stoned?
I hope so.
No, not a chance. Are you kidding? I can't speak for the French side, but not a chance in English. Not a chance.
Like everyone's just caffeine and that's it. Caffeine and nicotine.
Yeah.
Straight
I mean,
up.
People who work every day, who have regular radio jobs, right. Who work for Bell Media where I work.
Right. Right.
Not a chance.
Well, I guess it's very competitive and you can't really take the risk.
And it's very corporate. It's very corporate. So I don't think anybody would risk doing it.
All right.
You know? I could be
like
way
that.
Off.
I like it edgy. I like somebody who has a little, you know, Mickey in the drawer and, you know, the station manager, whoever it is, comes and, you know,
yeah, we were told
busts
to get
your
rid
chops.
Of, yeah, we had an open bottle of Jameson in my cabinet.
The old Ted Knight, the old Ted Baxter. Yeah. Lou.
We only dipped into it Friday. So you get off the air on Fridays. You know what it's like. It's been a week of shows and you want to unwind and not wait an hour to do so. So you just want to have a sip. And we were told we couldn't keep it open in the cabinet and hide it somewhere else. That's all. It's just, which I get it completely. Like, imagine walking into any office, anywhere, of any business, and you're seeing an open bottle of Jameson.
Yeah, but you're not in the OR.
It wouldn't offend
me. You're not operating. You're not about to be Dr. Melnick to OR, and you're, like, putting the bottle back, the cap back on the Glenfiddich.
That's the way it is.
I'll be right there, Ratchet.
That's the way it is.
I want my cigarettes, Martini. You can't have your cigarettes.
Used to have a lot of smoke in the studio and a lot of alcohol. It's those days long, long, long gone. Long gone.
Were there any broadcasters, famous broadcasters who were known? I'm talking about American, English.
I think everybody.
Where people would have a few, you know.
Oh, I don't think.
You think Howard Cosell had a few slugs before?
Oh, Howard Cosell, but that was bad. At the end, it was bad. It got him fired. You know, got him in trouble. He was a bad drinker. He was just
I didn't
an
know that.
Person.
I was just guessing.
No, at the end, he had a drinking problem. No question. Yeah. Joe Namath had a drinking problem.
Wow.
Remember that one on national TV? I want to kiss you.
What did he give him for a little smoochie? The kissing
Susie
the
Colbert?
Kissing bandit.
Yeah.
But his knees were so bad, she could have just, you know, did a quick sidestep and he would have fallen over. Not because he was tipsy, but because of his knees.
He's been cool since then, though. He got sober, like, right after that. It was embarrassing. But, yeah, so I came in like, early 80s. That was still very prevalent, and I knew some guys. And Dean Agopian, I'm sure, legendary Montreal DJ, even though at that point he was on CFCF radio working weekends, evenings. I don't think Dean would mind me saying at the end of his shift, we'd be blowing doobies in the back of the studio.
You and, did not.
Oh,
Mitchell.
Of course we were. Yeah, and then
say it ain't so. I don't hang out with reefers, weeders, as my mother would say.
No, but the thing is, Dick Irvin was doing Pulse Sports at the time,
right.
Down the hall. It was in the same building, the radio and TV stations. And Dick would walk in after 6, We'd usually exchange, like, I think he started to like me when I was young, when I started my career. He wanted me to, it's a whole other story, but he wanted me to audition for TV, but I never did, but it happened too late. But so he'd always check in on me. He'd say something about my update that I did in Dean Hagopian's show, and I was off the air at 6 o'clock, and Dean ended at 6, and we'd be smoking a doob, and Dick Irvin would walk in. And you can imagine how I felt when Dick Irvin walked in for the first time unexpectedly. Holy fuck, my whole life flashed in front of me. So I'm going to be fired before I even start. And the first time it happened, Dick looked around, and his nose is twitching, and he says, "I see you guys are getting the studio ready for Pastor Bob." Pastor Bob used to do a Sunday night religious show.
Really? Well, they probably thought it was incense.
Yeah.
You know, Orthodox Christian. You're just putting the flowing the incense around there, the myrrh and the frankincense.
Anyway. Yeah, we're having fun. We're recording this on Friday. Friday's always a good night. We rarely record on a Friday night.
It's true.
What's the date today? March 28th?
29th.
Okay, March 29th. So this podcast could be called Between the Beauty and the Pain. From that song, there's going to be a theme that you might get, and we're also going to talk to Shane about how he constructs a song. We're going to play a couple of his own songs from scratch.
Lots of weed.
This is the latest from the great Nico Case, who will be performing soon, in just a few weeks, at the Corona Theater.
storm, she still cries for days. Have mercy on the natural world.
That's the title track from Nico Case's latest, Hell On. Favorite song on this album is actually, for me, Curse of the I-5 Corridor. She'll be at the Corona Theater. She's got one of the most incredible voices in music today. Do you ever watch the...
No weed was smoked making or writing that album at all. That sounded
you want to expand on that?
No, it sounded like a mix between Tom Waits, Leonard Cohen, and then it went Beach Boys, and then it went Velvet Underground. Like, if I was on mushrooms or acid right now, things would really bad. Like, I felt anxious halfway through. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, it's intense. Boom,
ding,
it's intense.
Ding, ding, yeah. Ding. God is not a contract. Ding, 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 ding. He's staring you in the eye. Bling, 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 bling. Make it go away.
Do you listen with headphones when you listen to music? Not yourself. When you listen to music, do you listen with headphones?
No, in the car.
No, you don't have
in the car cranked.
In the car, yep. Yeah, I've been in that car.
That's it.
Good system. And what about at home? You don't listen at home?
I'm playing minimum 3 times a week, usually 4, sometimes 5. So I get a little music out. Like, I need the silence. So I find myself sometimes I'll really trip on an artist or a song, whatever. When I'm not in my car listening to stuff that I want to check out or stuff that I have to go back over or stuff that I'm working on, I find myself either watching documentaries or checking out stand-up comics. Like, I get a lot of inspiration from stand-up, good stand-up. And it sort of gives my ears a break because it's just like music, 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 guitar, guitar, guitar. Like, you know, I look at it sometimes and I'm very fortunate to make a living playing guitar and, you know, living my life, doing what I'm doing. But, you know, you don't want to. It's one thing to play the guitar because you want to play the guitar. It's another thing when you're obliged mm-hmm. to pay the bills, you know. And people would say, oh, poor you. But I'm just saying, after a while, you know, you look at a guitar, you want to give it a good kick, you know, because you hit plateaus, you're not really developing as a player, whatever. Yeah, so I'm not really tripping on artists or music albums so much as I am, I would say, documentaries and stand-up comics.
Who's your favorite current stand-up?
Favorite current
stand-up? Did you like the show that was on? Help me out here.
I like
Pete
Julie.
Holmes.
No, I haven't seen it.
He's a stand-up comic in New York City, in Greenwich Village.
No.
And just it was a fun show. It ended, just came to an end. It was so enjoyable, not only because it was a show about stand-up comedians, but the setting, it was in New York, and it seemed like every second place they filmed, I was there. They're among my favorite spots in the Village, including the Comedy Cellar, which is a great little room that a lot of
everybody... Ray Romano just did something there?
Ray Romano at the Comedy Cellar?
Well, he just did a Netflix thing where he walked from one to the other.
He might have been. I haven't seen it.
Two very famous New York...
Yeah, I might have been.
...stand-up comedy venues.
Yeah, so that was that...
My favorite... I think Jim Jeffries is very, very smart. Bill Burr.
Bill Burr.
You took me to see Bill Burr. Pete Santiago, my old bass player, turned us on to him like maybe 8 years ago. Before he broke, he's like, you got to check this guy out. Joey Diaz, pretty funny. But I find myself going back, like, you know, Richard Pryor, Red Fox.
Red Fox?
Yeah.
That's your dad's era.
Yeah, I like all that stuff. I feel like I'm, as an artist, obliged to check that stuff out, you know.
It's the second time you've used the word obliged in completely different meanings.
Really?
Yeah.
When was the last time?
Well, you were talking about having to play the guitar for a living.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's your word de jour, kind of like your phrase de jour, like without further ado.
Mot de jour. De jour.
Yes. One of our faithful listeners thought that maybe we were having an issue last time.
What do you mean?
I don't know. That we were
that
having.
We're beefing?
That we needed a referee or something. When Bilal was here.
Things were contentious.
By the way, happy 40th to Bilal.
The big 4-0.
As we're recording this, he is about to celebrate his 40th, and he doesn't even know it.
So if Bilal's 40, that means I'm 37 and a half.
Sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Do you like Chris Stapleton?
Yes, I do.
All right. There are some people wondering who Chris Stapleton is, so let's listen first.
Okay.
This is Chris Stapleton from, I think it's Volume 2. It's either Volume 1 or Volume 2. It's Volume 1.
Okay.
Postman delivered. Past due bill notice. Long clock rang 2 hours late. The garbage man left all the trash on the sidewalk. The hinges fell off a gate. This morning at breakfast, spilled all the coffee and opened the door on my knee. Oh, the last thing I needed, first thing this morning, was to have you walk out on me. Last night you came home late. Knew you'd been drinking by that old mellow look on your face. I thought it don't matter, 'cause it's the holiday season and you feel such a big empty space. Beside you, and I wanted your loving, 'cause your love makes my life complete. Oh, the last thing I need, first thing this morning, is to have you walk. Excuse me for looking like my world's ending. And excuse me for looking like I just lost my best friend. And excuse me for loving, being poor. Last thing I need, first thing this morning, was to have you walk out on me. Oh, the last thing I need, first thing this morning, was to have you walk.
That's the sound of Chris Stapleton with a knife in his heart.
Why don't we play a sad song next?
That's an old school hurtin' country song from Inner Room, Chris Stapleton, Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Got the Waylon Jennings country phaser on the guitar off the top, and then it's all Willie Nelson.
It's a beautiful, soulful voice.
All Willie Nelson
voice.
The rest of the way.
And he's one of the country artists that we're supposed to play here. We've been getting a wave of country, some new pop country, but also a little more traditional. But he would have been the most of traditional country artists in this wave of country acts that they kept bringing in at Ovenco. But he didn't. His show canceled. The most genuine of the country artists that were booked to play here couldn't play here.
Well, he's like a throwback to the outlaw country, guys.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
The Highwaymen.
That's it.
Merle Haggard.
It's right up my alley.
George Jones.
Highwaymen. Party. What is it? The party
Chris,
never ends.
Chris Christopherson.
Yes.
Johnny Cash. Willie Nelson.
Waylon Jennings.
Waylon Jennings.
The Highwaymen.
Yeah. Figure they had a few drinks at the studio sessions or what?
Actually, the last one they did when they got back together in the 90s, and they were still in pretty good health, Waylon and Johnny Cash. They weren't in peak form, but they were in pretty good health. And a lot of those sessions were filmed. So there is like backstage recording studio banter. And it's a big tease to imagine what it would have been like to hang around with those guys.
I recorded in Pernales at Willie's studio. It's been about 10 years. And I met this photographer, I forget his name, but there's a town right near there called Spicewood. But the way they pronounce it, it sounds like Spacewood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like Willie's town. Like, it's a community of like 300 houses, and about 150 of them are like Willie's people, distant cousins, friends, whatever. And at the time, he owned, so he had Pernales, which was like an old, was on a 9-hole golf course, and it looked like an old, you know, when country houses, the wood turns like gray almost on the outside, like really weathered, you know, and inside it was, you know, all the bells and whistles and all the gold records and Always on My Mind and Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain and all like the real deal. Anyways, I met this photographer and he said, Willie owned, not far from there, like a ghost town where they would shoot movies and, you know, and one of the places had a...
Tumbleweeds?
One of them, you know, could shoot movies there or whatever. And one of them had a working bar. And he said he went in and he smoked a little number with the boys. And...
8 miles high?
Oh, ground control to Major Tom. So that's it's funny. Those guys, you know, were more rock and roll than
they were
the wheatgrass drinking, yoga doing, vegan. Not that there's anything wrong with that, you know. Pop stars like those guys are the real rock and roll guys, right?
They were, and with you know, throw in Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard.
Yeah.
These are badasses.
Yep.
These guys.
They all like to party. Most of them. Elvis.
Did you like,
I would try to tell my mom that Elvis used, you know, had a problem with pills, and she'd be like, they're just making that up. I'm like, no, mom, for real. He's been on speed since he's 19 years old.
Where's
you can't
pills,
do,
man? Where's my pill?
You can't do 55 nights, 55 shows in 60 nights and just be okay. Like, that's not normal. You know, there are some substances that you need, the little kickstart to your day.
Yeah, and on the movie set, when you read the script, you realize how bad this fucking movie is.
Yeah. Elvis, we got to win this race. We got to win this race. Eddie Murphy, Delirious.
That is so good.
You like that one?
Oh, yeah. What's it like listening to yourself? Welcome back. It is the Melnick and Murphy podcast, episode 23 from CNS Studio in Western NDG.
West Side.
And a big thank you to the man who lets us keep going here.
Mr. Lorne Rubin.
Helps us out at Lorne Rubin Paramount Financial Services, 514-905-0885, 514-905-0885, proud sponsor. And he keeps asking me, when am I going to have company sponsoring this podcast? Because you keep saying there are people who want to sponsor the podcast.
I keep saying
Spit that out.
I keep saying that, or you keep saying that?
No, I keep saying that. Right. There are other people who want to sponsor it, and Lauren keeps listening. He says, how come I'm still alone as the lone sponsor? I said, it's prestigious. We're making it last a little longer. People will remember that you were there at the beginning.
The Lone Ranger.
And you hung in there. It's like the title sponsorship, Paramount Financial Services. You're getting your money's worth.
Yeah.
And then it'll be a couple of others later. But in the meantime, thank you, Lauren. He's a real mensch. 514-905-0885. He will take good care of your money. He is he doesn't have any of these quacky ideas. He's he treats money with respect. He's very conservative. He makes it grow. He makes it work. And he's a great guy.
And he's sponsoring sharp, and he's a sharp dresser.
Occasionally. 514-905-0885. So what is it like listening to yourself in that moment?
Mixed emotions. I mean, I'm obliged to say that...
That's three.
I threw that out there. He's swearing at it. Swing and a miss. You hear... I mean, I like the song. I like the energy that it has. I just end up... Oh, what could I have done differently in the studio? But that's why they call it a record. It's a recording of you at that time. And, you know, you hear little mistakes here and there, but...
Yeah, but so what?
Overall, it's. I think the intention is good. I like
the feeling of it.
Yeah, I mean, I can drive around in that. You know, that's one of the songs that I've recorded where I can drive around in my car and crank it. I'm like, yeah.
It's from Shane Murphy, The Good Years, Dirty Work. We used to play this on the air a lot. We used to play a lot of this album on the air when it first came out and a lot of your stuff on the air when it first came out because I thought you were good enough to have more people discover your music. Because you're so fucking good. And that's why we're doing the podcast. And I think I've waited long enough. We played a couple of your songs. You did a couple live. But I wanted to get a couple of your own songs in here. Just in case anybody's forgotten.
And, I won't go away.
And I don't think having Bilal Butt on the show on the last podcast got you on the playlist. I don't know.
We'll piss somebody off.
I was told they're waiting for new product.
Right. Okay. Well, it's coming.
Okay, good. Yeah. So can you take us into the process? So that is from, why did you call it The Good Years, Dirty Work, that album? It's like a title and a subtitle.
Yeah, why did I call it that? That's a long story.
Well, I don't know. Alan, do we have time or is somebody waiting to kick us out?
Thanks, dude.
We've got all night, apparently.
Dirty Work. The Good Years was a song that I wrote, and it ended up on the deluxe version of that album, and which is on Spotify. It's not on that. It's not actually didn't make
on the physical CD.
Yeah, didn't make it, but I ended up recording that in Texas. And Dirty Work is also a title of a song that's on that album, and. Yeah, it's just, it was just a meaning. It was for myself, like, The Good Years was about when you're with somebody in a relationship, that song, The Good Years, when, you know, you hear people after they break up, they're like, you know, I gave you all my good years, you know, whether it be, you know, your 20s or your 30s or whatever your perspective is. But usually 20s and 30s, and you have these. And sometimes you're, you know, 40s and 50s, depending. And you have these relationships that become a big part of your life and take up, you know, let's say you have 75 years on the planet, let's say, if you're lucky, 80, if you're really lucky, 85. But there's a certain amount of those years where you're in your prime. You know, physically, mentally, emotionally, your age, you're not a teenager, you're adult, and you can really. So that's where that title came from.
Being she should have caught me in my prime. She would have stayed with me instead of going off to sea and leaving me to meditate on a simple twist of fate.
People think it's a crime. She could have caught me in my prime. Yeah, so that was that. And Dirty Work was just a reference to, I was in the midst of really, really sort of putting in work in the bars, which I still do, but I mean, that hasn't stopped. But at that point, it was like I was this never ending slog. I was downtown every weekend. I was, you know, Honey Martin's on Wednesdays. Plus, you know, it was like 5 or 6 nights a week, and it was just really sort of, I just, you know, doing the dirty work, you know, doing the
grunt work.
Yeah, earning it, you know, and so that's why the good years, the dirty work.
Can you tell us, and kind of, because I know you could weave it right into it, can you tell us about Skinny Jeans and the song that's going to follow it, Silk Road?
The process or
yeah.
Well, I was working with, I was producing the album, and I was working with an engineer who was very feisty, and she was precocious and was very regimented in her approach. So when we would have these studio sessions, you know, you're signed to a label, you're working on a deadline, and I was sort of very willy-nilly when it came to being in the studio, sort of letting inspiration hit, as it were. So I knew that I had to, you know, I owed the label another album, and I knew I had to come up with between, you know, an album is 11, 13 songs. You're contractually, obliged. You're contracted to do those songs. So you need to come up with content. And so with Skinny Jeans, she would always get in a bit of a tizzy. She'd be like, well, what are we doing? What's going on? Do you have a song? You know, and she'd open the session, and it's all digital at this point. We're not recording on tape. So she's opened the computer, and so you have to give the file a name. She's like, so what are we going to call it? And so I'm walking in and, you know, playing the night before, and I'm tired, and I'm just coming up with stuff and on the fly. And I had written some words, and I had, you know, books of lyrics lying around the house, and you have different themes that sort of stick in your head, like, oh, that'd be a cool song title. And I was like, oh yeah, this one's called Skinny Jeans. And I hadn't written anything. That's all I had was the title. And she's like, so what are we going to start with? And I had a friend of mine, one of the many drummers that I've played with over the years. He was playing with me at the time, and we had his drums set up, and we were miking it up. And I was like, "Yeah, just go, you know, poof, poof, bash, poof, poof, bah, do something like a basic rock and roll, you know, John Bonham-esque type of drum beat." And then I just started playing the opening chord, and just sort of built the song like that. And it was for me, it's one of the stronger, if not the strongest song on the album.
It's a great song.
And it just, you know, sometimes magic hits in the studio and you get lucky. So
there are some people who probably never heard you go up there vocally.
Right. The old Curtis Mayfield. Yeah. I've tried it all now. I'm working on a polka album right now. You get the accordion in here. Roll out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun. And sometimes you work on a song and it's, you know, it doesn't open itself up to you. And sometimes it takes 5 years to write a song. But that one came together pretty quick. And Silk Road, I had the opening guitar lick for a couple of years just kicking around. Whenever I play the guitar, I'd play this lick. And I was having a hard time coming up with a chorus. And a friend of mine named Johnny Owen, who's a very talented singer-songwriter.
I think he opened one of your album launches.
He opened Street Money, yeah. He did an acoustic set.
At the Corona.
At the Corona, yeah.
Yeah.
And he released an album a couple of years ago, and he's a super talented guy, and just acoustic, really into Delta blues, into old country, gospel, really American gothic, knows all the old, you know, blues masters, you know, Charlie Poole, Son House, Blind Willie McTell, just loves all that stuff. And so I reached out to him and I said, man, I'm having a hard time, finishing this one with the chorus. And he, in the way that he does, he just, it took him about 30 seconds and he started singing the chorus and, or the first half of the chorus. And then everything just sort of came together.
So. This is Shane Murphy from The Good Years Dirty Work. It's the cut that closes the album. Available on Spotify.
Yes, sir.
Silk Road.
And you're shaking me down. You're shaking me down. You're shaking me down. That silk rope. And you're breaking me down. You're breaking me down. You're breaking me.
Yeah. That's a song most people have never heard Shane Murphy sing, unless you have the Goodyear's Dirty Work album that came out how many years ago? Seven?
Yeah, 2012.
How do you decide?
It was six and a half, yeah.
How do you decide that you're going to, because I'm sure that wasn't, unless you want to correct me, this wasn't your first take. It wasn't the first way the song came out. Like, how do you decide, okay, we're going to go with the soft vocals and this kind of acoustic kind of feel to it, as opposed to maybe try something harder and it doesn't fit, even though the music sounds good, it doesn't set. Like, how do you get through that process of going through a song in different forms before settling on it?
I mean, trial and error, really. I mean, it's a weird process to go through, but each song is like. Like having a kid, but I mean each song has its own personality, so you just have to wait until
you have that feeling in your gut. Do you have it in mind before you start playing it?
Well, the lick itself, the intro would lend itself to that. I mean, it gets pretty heavy and hairy in the middle, but the lick itself is a soft.
But you ever have something like that, and then you play with it, and you decide, okay, I'm gonna play it faster and give it a different shade.
Yeah,
you usually stick with what you start with.
People, you could do that. People do that. They'll play it fast. They'll play it slow. They'll change the keys. They'll play it backwards. But that's usually if you're writing for speed, like you're writing to get, you know, to get stuff over with. If you're in a wrong songwriting session with someone, or you know, you're just throwing stuff against the wall. But in that case, you know, in that particular case, it was just a very organic thing. It just opened itself. And when Johnny came up with the, if you're shaking me down, breaking me down, the song just sort of unfolded.
And it's really beautiful song. Thanks. It's great, great song, honestly. More people Thank should you. Know about it. And that's you. Why I'm playing it. And thanks for explaining it.
Yeah.
Wish we could play a little more.
Well,
but I got to go to these guys. They were from Canada. Four Fifths were from Canada. They called themselves The Band. I mean, come on, The Band.
Marshmallow Overcoats. The Crackers.
The Honkies.
That's my favorite scene in the last
Richard
Waltz.
Manuel.
When he's on the couch.
Yeah.
The Honkies, The Crackers, Marshmallow Overcoat. We were The Band. Like, ooh, Richard.
Yeah. Let's go jam with The Band. And this is from The Last Waltz. Our theme, if you have forgotten, was Between the Beauty and the Pain, From a Deeper Understanding and The Strangest Things, The War on Drugs, which kicked it off. This is the last time they ever played this song. It's the greatest version. I don't think if anybody can find a better version of this song, I'd certainly like to hear it. Johnny Griffin and John Jacob Magistri did a great version. I requested it that they perform it at The Last Waltz 40th anniversary at the Corona Theater in November of 2016. And so let's go back to the Winterland Theater in San Francisco, 1976. The Band. Still
Thank you.
What a way to go out, huh? Wow. What a song. Incredible. What a beautiful guitar player Robbie Robertson is.
We were just, you know, concerned more about fixing recording equipment or fixing a door.
That's Garth.
Yep.
On that saxophone at the end, the byplay between Robbie's guitar and the saxophone, just gorgeous. And Rick Danko's vocals.
You should be a music producer.
Oh, my God. It's just beautiful. It's just pretty. You can't get any better than that, honestly. And to know that you were going out that night, this last time you'll play it. And, of course, Richard Manuel and Levon on drums. And from The Last Waltz, the band, it makes no difference. I don't even know what album it's on.
Neither do I.
Honestly, I just know it from that version. I have every album they produce, but I can't remember the last time I heard the studio version. And that's
Dylan wrote that?
Pardon me?
Dylan wrote that?
No, that's Robbie Robertson.
He wrote that?
Yeah, okay. Robbie Robertson wrote that. And that's the thing about when you can make that much of a leap playing live as opposed to the studio, right? Some things that artists produce in the studio, you can't even recreate properly on stage without help.
Very hard.
But when you can improve just through the playing and the singing of what the studio version is like, it's hard to beat that. It's great. That's what it should be. Here's the studio version. Now here's me live in the moment, and it should be way, way better than the studio version, in my opinion. And that's what you're about. As good as what the two tracks that we just heard from the Goodyear's Dirty Work, that's like when you play them live, it takes it somewhere else.
I think I can hear Alan and
Andre
talking in the booth there.
Yeah.
I hope it's not bleeding into the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop kissing his man. I didn't hear the rest, but...
It's echo, too. And we're hearing Bo Kavanaugh from downstairs.
Bombarded.
Huh?
We're being bombarded from both sides.
Yeah, it's time to leave. It's time to leave. We're going out with something pretty heavy duty. But is there a hurtin' song or a breakup song or a farewell song that... Is a go-to song when you feel the urge to identify?
There's
you get to play them out, right?
Yeah, there's three of them. Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain, Willie Nelson. Buck Owens and Ray Charles on Hee Haw, they do a version of Crying Time. And then...
Hee Haw. Check it out on YouTube, Hee
Haw. Oh, man. And then Ray Charles doing I Can't Stop Loving You, which I think is a Don Gibson song, I'm not sure.
And oh, that's his country album that he made, right?
Modern Sound and Country Western Music, yeah. 1961, I think he released it. And I think he's on the Dick Cavett Show. And he opens it up, and he's got four beautiful backup singers standing by the piano. And he goes, I'd like to dedicate this one to my girlfriend and her new boyfriend, wherever they are tonight. And then he just goes into the song. It's like, man, oh, wow. But yeah. I guess those are my top three.
Yeah.
I try not to listen to them, though.
One of the all-timers is Steve Earle, especially when Steve Earle and Emmylou Harris sing it together called Goodbye. It's a Steve Earle song. So why don't you play it? Because I want to play this to go out. They recently came out with the Ultimate Edition of Blood on the Tracks, one of the most famous albums about the separation and a relationship breaking up and all that. And everybody assumed every song on the album was about Dylan and his wife at the time, and it wasn't. A lot of it was, but some of it was having to say goodbye to his girlfriend because he was going to reconcile with his wife. Blood on the Tracks is a brilliant album. It was originally planned as an acoustic only album. That's the beauty of the box set, is you get to hear every track that was recorded in New York originally before they redid it in for some of the half the tracks, at least in Minneapolis, because it was too raw. But that's the best part of it, are the raw takes, solo acoustic, of some of the Dylan classics. The real divorce album, when Dylan divorced Sarah, was...
Jacob Dylan's mother?
Yes.
Okay.
That album is called Street Legal, and it's just before his Christian phase, the Slow Train Coming. It's called Street Legal. It's a very underrated album. It's Dylan and the first time Dylan uses backup singers. He had a relationship with one of the backup singers, later married her and had a child with her. But it's an extremely soulful Bob Dylan. Very underrated.
Street Legal.
Underappreciated album. And We're going to go out with a song which ends the album. It is called Where Are You Tonight? Journey Through Dark Heat. So kind of like the Goodyear's Dirty Work, there's a title and a subtitle. Hmm. Where Are You Tonight? Journey Through Dark Heat. Thank you, Shane Murphy.
Thank you, Nick. It was fun.
It was fun having Bilal Hill here and last time, and it'll be fun having Howard Billerman here and the next time maybe. Yeah, but it was cool occasionally to
I got
just
two,
the two of
I
us.
I have two guests lined up. Not for the same podcast, but I have two that I've been working on.
Who's coming up?
I'm not telling you.
Anything you'd like to say about anything that's coming up? Any Netflix show very quickly that you want to recommend?
Oh, my God. Explained.
What is it?
It's just a series of Explained and Losers. Losers, there's one with, I think his name is Richard Bent.
It's on the...
Boxer.
It's on
tremendous,
the list. Yeah, it's on my list story. To watch when I saw what that
crazy,
was about. Yeah.
Crazy, crazy. Losers and Explained.
Thank you again to Lorne Rubin, Paramount Financial Services. He will take good care of your money. 514-905-0885. Alan Hodgson, thank you very much. CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West Side, West Side.
Thank you for listening. We're going out with Bob Dylan from 1978 off the album Street Legal. Where are you tonight?
Missing her so much, but she's drifting like a satellite. There's a neon light ablaze in a green smoky haze and laughter down on Elizabeth Street. There's a lonesome fell tone in that valley of stone as she bathes in a stream of pure heat. Her father a bit more than streetwise, but he practiced what he preached from the heart. He full bloody Cherokee, he predicted it to me, the time and the place that we part. There's a babe in the arms of a woman in a rage, and a long time golden hand stripper on stage, and she winds
put nickels in dimes. The man you were loving could never get clean. It felt out of place, my foot in his face, but he should have stayed where.